Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Fat Lot of Good podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne. I'm excited about this episode, people. I'm also excited because this podcast is sponsored by the fabulous F&F Clothing. I love these guys. I love this brand. F&F make clothing for women, which will make you feel gorgeous and it won't break the bank. Now, there are many reasons I love this brand. In particular, I love that they use recycled polyester. That's right, people. This year, for spring, summer and autumn, winter 19, F&F saved more than 26 million plastic bottles from polluting the world's oceans. And this was achieved across men's swim shorts, school wear and ladies' and men's outerwear. How brilliant is that? So F&F, well, they look good and they do good. So go pick up some clothes from F&F today. You can get them from your Tesco Extra shops or get them online at next.co.uk. And the best news is for women, you can get them in sizes from 6 to 22. And go on, follow them on social media. They're at F&F Clothing and you can see all their latest looks. Okay, it's time for the podcast to begin. Hello and welcome to the Fat Lot of Good podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne. I'm a comedian, writer, one half the Scummy Mummies. I have a big bottom and I like it. Now, today I am joined not only by one special guest, I have two special guests in the pod room. It is, of course, Annabelle and Emily, the middle. Hello.
Hi, hello. Helen.
Wow, I am thrilled to have these women. They are not only warm, but they're warriors. They're not only floral and fabulous, but they're fierce and they're taking the world by storm. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having us. I would counter and say that my tits are bigger than your ass.
Well, it would make a lovely photo.
I want to see it. I would like to counter and say I love your bottom and your tits. Oh! So I feel really lucky.
And Emily has amazing legs. So we've got everything covered. And we're all clever. We're all smart.
Put together, we form one fully functional human woman.
Yes. We're like a mega Charlie's Angels. I think that's it for the 2000. What are we? 2000 teens. What are we called?
The teens.
Oh, the teens?
That's why it's so utterly shit.
It is. It's so undefinable and so, I don't know.
No one knows what they want or who they are.
Exactly. We're in this weird adolescence.
Does that mean it'll all be better next year?
Hopefully.
When we're so responsible in our 20s. Yeah, because that went well for me.
Oh my God, my 20s were much, much wilder and more ridiculous and more full of bad choices than my teens.
Yeah, at least you were in the bosom of home. You know, like in your 20s, you had to pay rent and kind of be grown up and responsible for yourself. And teens were kind of sheltered in a way and you had the structure of school. 20s just, oh dear God.
I know, you could do all of the things that you could do and then you realise that you couldn't. That was basically my 20s.
Oh, and buying stupid clothes.
And sleeping with terrible men.
Exactly.
And drinking too much and taking too many...
things.
Ibuprofen.
Yes. Putting all sorts of things in your body you probably shouldn't. But it was of the time and you got excited about being in your 20s. You felt like you were finally grown up, but you really weren't.
I know, that's the thing, isn't it?
I have a suit I have the suit jacket from my 20s, from my first job that I bought from Joseph. And it's like super smart, kind of pinstripe suit. And the reason I still got it is because I only wore it about 3 times because I felt like a complete imposter in it in my 20s.
Yeah.
Now, age 44, I'm like, oh, okay, this works 20 years later. And I still don't feel like a grown up though.
I know. I remember buying a suit and it was from a brand called Country Road, which was like the smart.
Oh, that sounds bad.
It was terrible. It was in a blue pinstripe suit. And I was
That just, sounds like prison officer label.
Oh.
I can't wear suits. They make me look like a fridge.
I can't do it. Not with these bottoms and these.
These bottoms. I'm a many, many bottomed woman. What can
bottom.
I say? I'm blessed with plenty.
I love it though. When I dress in a suit, I look like I'm Annabelle's like really chic architect wife.
Yeah. She wears a trouser suit. Off we go.
You match very well. And sometimes I've seen photos of you wearing a matching frock.
Yes.
And is that when you launch your first book? I say your first. You're going to have many, I'm sure.
Tons.
That was an H&M dress.
Yeah, which
and
we both love.
Emily bought it and I said, do you mind, dear? And she said no.
And so it was like a lovely long green floral number.
Yeah, it was
number.
Really good dress. But actually, a lot. Even though we have different shapes, we do have quite a lot of this similar clothes. Like the jumpsuit that I'm wearing now, Annabelle has and looks great on her. And then we've got the green dress. We've got another jumpsuit.
The trouble is that I find is that because of the enormous bosoms,
frontage.
And I keep talking about the frontage because it has kind of, you know, from the age of about 13 defined the way people respond to me and the way I respond to myself. Because of the frontage, my clothes don't last as long as Emily's because the frontage
it's
pulls
frontage.
On every seam.
No, look at my,
it's
I
in the front.
I'm,
there you go.
See, I really should be in a size 20 shirt, but I can't bring myself to.
Well, even if it was, it would still gape. You have to stitch up the gaping button. I stitch everything up.
Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, I think you can tell these women are amazing, warm, funny, terribly honest, terribly, terribly honest. And that's why you are such a success. Now, can you tell us what the Mid-Alt is? How did it come about?
Well, it came about largely just to be schlocky because of our friendship and female friendship. And we knew we wanted to do something together before we knew what we wanted it to be. And while we were talking, we realized that no one was talking to us the way that we talked to each other. And everything was being put through a slightly weird filter, probably as a relic from... I'm marketing men, and they would have been men from the 60s. So we were like, what is a busy working mommy? Does she sort of shower in Bisto and douche with Dolmio? Because we didn't relate at all. And so we wanted something that was honest, a new definition really for a new generation, because we grew up with one foot in analog, one foot in digital, so we could do all the hyper-connectedness, but we could also have a conversation. And we thought it would be interesting to explore that and also to try and... look at other women like us and to assume that we were all more alike than we were unalike, and therefore we weren't all in it together, then really we weren't all in it at all, and to bring shame out into the light because it can't survive there. So if we thought, if we put everything on the table, and we do put everything on the table, then maybe people would respond, and they did, didn't they, in a way that we hadn't anticipated.
And actually, I think as well, it's been much cheaper than therapy, which I can no longer afford. So it started off me telling Annabelle everything and vice versa, and now we tell everybody else everything. And then the feedback we get, and the, you know, I get stopped at the school gates, we don't often talk about, because I think people think that I because I put stuff out there, because we put stuff out there,
basically
that
when
talk.
Someone says how are you, we treat it as a question.
Now people come up to me at the school gates and say things like, you know, I think my therapist is a bit of a dick, and I go, well, if you feel that, probably is.
Exactly.
And that kind of thing. And I had another experience where I was like complaining about my back, because obviously backs hurt all the time. Welcome to your 40s. And the girl turned around to me and said, I'm having a hysterectomy next week. And I said, you win. And
then
we laughed.
And the other thing that we wanted to do was do something where there were no children present. Because people, I mean, primarily in our lives, do brilliant stuff that aggregates around kids. But we didn't want to do that because there was a lot of good stuff that was doing it probably better than we could. Because we wanted it to be just about identity. Identity separated from talking about kids, and also because there's so much pain around having children that we, and which I personally had experienced in a really kind of sharp and bitter way, we didn't want to inflict that on other people. We thought, okay, if they can come to us, you know, I went through a phase in my life when I couldn't watch a nappy advert, I couldn't walk through a maternity department. I had a kind of inner monologue of hatred when I saw a pregnant woman, and so we just thought that we would lovingly remove children with a syringe.
That is a lovely thing. If only. Oh, what a thought. Anyway, but yeah, I think that's so true, because as soon as you have a child, you go into the mum camp, and like you're basically
could be quite
kind
isolating.
Of, you're either a parent or a non-parent. You're not just women, which we
and you're judged on that.
Yeah,
I
exactly,
think.
Absolutely. Because you had when did you you've got a child?
I have a boy who I had by myself. Yes,
he's
just turned 5. But also the other thing about the Mid-Alt that we wanted was we wanted light and shade. So we wanted it to be fucking funny as we could make it. But also really to like press the bruise sometimes and to look at what causes us pain and humiliation and anguish and anxiety. And panic, fucking panic, whether it's moths or death.
And I mean, when we in the introduction to the book, we go through all the things that we've been through in our 20s together and separately. And the list is like endless, sort of like eating disorders, dead dads, post-traumatic disorder, nuclear financial breakup, emotional breakups,
addictions.
It just goes on and on and on. Mm. And I think,
I don't think we're particularly extreme. That makes us sound like insane rock stars. I think we're pretty bog standard. I think most people have got that in the closet.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that the notion of as soon as you hit 40, you're just sort of this bland, you know, your past is erased by your tweed and your Bowdoin
shirt. Yeah,
there's
an assumption that there will be a dumbing down of emotion. And I think the opposite happens. It's just we're not teenagers, so we don't act out on it in the same way.
And we've got money. Some of us do. We have probably more money than we did in our 20s.
Yeah.
Even if it is an extra 20 quid and we go, fuck it, I'm going to buy that face cream or I'm going to treat myself well.
So we have choices.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love the fact when I walk down the street with, you know, on the school run or whatever with kids and looking to all intents and purposes like a kind of, you know, responsible human adult. And then I see people coming the other way, you know, because they've been coming from the pub or wherever or for a party. And I just think, you know, you look at me and you think, oh, look, there she goes, that kind of pillar of society.
Yeah.
Oh, if only you knew.
Exactly.
If only you knew.
Because Emily's one of those really funny, people who is a pillar of the community. She's a compulsive volunteer. She goes to church. She runs Sunday school. She reads in church. She's a very good person. She will leap to help anybody, but she has a properly murky past. And you would never know. Look at her. She's like a vicar's wife.
Exactly. My father is a vicar and my mother was, of course, the vicar's wife, but she was a virgin when she was born. She has only one drink at a time. So she projected this image to me about what a mother should be, a wife should be. The house was, she was like a cleaning ninja. When we woke up in the morning, the breakfast table was laid.
She was the Victorian domestic angel.
Yes, she was. And it's really interesting because I still have that in the back of my head about how a mother should behave and how I should be around my children. And it's a bit more like Ab Fab, but my children are going, stop being so sarcastic. You're not wearing that. Stop swearing, Helen. Yeah, they call me Helen. Stop swearing, Mummy. And you speak about this so beautifully in your podcast. One of the questions that you ask your guests is, so tell us about your relationship with your mother and how that kind of defines. Because now that you're both mothers, how does that play on you?
What plays again in my head is that I would just like to make different mistakes.
Yeah.
I know I'm going to fuck up in all sorts of areas, but I'd like them to be my own fuck ups and not my parents.
Yeah.
And to me, that's slightly winning. So having an awareness around what shaped me. And
it's
just,
like an evolution.
Just yeah. Exactly that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think as well, like my mum started coming to some of our events, and she loves the book, and I think she's been sort of profoundly moved by the female friendship element and the fact that women now go out and will have a good time. She says, you know, in when she was, you know, first married, it never would have occurred to her and the other wives or friends or whatever to go out for dinner, or if they wanted to go see a play.
No, if there was a hot new restaurant, you had to wait for some man who was unsafe in taxis to take you. You couldn't do that stuff by yourself.
No, that's why I love when you go out and just see a gaggle of women just getting progressively either more gossip or more drunk or whatever.
I think that's why hen nights were invented.
Yeah.
And why they're sort of a bit odd now. It's because we can all go and get pissed with our friends every night of the week if we want to. But
exactly.
I think that was a precious window when you were sanctioned to be able to go and be rowdy with other women.
Your last hurrah. That was it. And then pop the penny on and serve. What did you do for your wedding, Emily?
So for my wedding, which was to my lovely husband, Chris, I now have to say this because he's totally freaked out by the fact that I never mentioned him in the
podcast.
Because
we don't mention babies or husbands.
Oh, I see. Oh, this is quite liberating.
I know, exactly. So my lovely husband, Chris. I got married at Chiswick House. And because I don't drink, I don't like the whole long wedding fandango. So it started at 4 and we left at 8:30.
See you, bitches.
Everyone else.
So you could keep it cheap, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was absolutely brilliant. No dance floor.
So it was basically a ceremony and a cup of tea.
Yeah. And some oysters and a magician. But but it was basically a kids' party and cake. I mean, essentially, actually, it was.
Did you have a booze-free reception?
No. Tons of booze.
Okay.
I think my parents-in-law still are drinking the booze. but no, because they really they overordered. No. So, but no. And then everyone else went and got apps. absolutely shit-faced till kind of whatever, and Chris and I just went to bed.
Excellent.
But, well, but it was lovely.
Lots of lovely sex.
Yes, that was the great thing about not being either drunk or exhausted, because it finished at 8:30, so yeah.
Yes, off you went. And would you like to talk about being sober? When did you, how long
yes.
have you been sober?
So I think it's either 13 or 14 years. I know that sounds, it sounds weird to not actually, I used to forensically kind of,
yes.
But I think it's nearly 14.
It's like
in
children
December.
For the first, you count yes. by months and then by years.
By minutes. And then now I'm like, oh, maybe. And then that sounds quite grand. But yeah, so I stopped drinking. Basically, I was just a disastrous, a lot of my narrative is all about self-loathing. Mm. So it was just another way of kind of punishing myself, and it got to a point where I was in my head so unreliable, and I just really despised myself, and so I stopped. I thought, okay, if I change one thing, maybe it will help.
Yeah.
And so I stopped drinking, and there's a history of alcoholism in my family, so it wasn't like it was a sort of. And obviously, I was a terrible drunk, so it wasn't like a big secret.
We used to go out and get, and, you know, and get into all sorts of trouble together. But I would, you know, I'd pull the ripcord at 2 on a work night, and Emily would call in sick the next day, or get someone to call in sick for her. So that was the difference, really.
Yeah,
yeah. Or you know, I'd go out. We'd go out for a drink on a Friday, and I would still be going on Sunday morning. You know, that's as and I have a really addictive personality, so I can, you know, whether it's Haribo or box sets or
if there was a plate, you wouldn't know because she's so slim. If there was a plate of biscuits. Or it's morning, so croissants in the middle of this table. The moment they landed there, Emily's eyes would go crazy and darting.
Yes.
And she'd start to calculate when she could have one and also how they would be divided up, so how many she could have. It runs across all sorts of
in
areas
fact,
of your
actually,
life.
I really
it?
Remember when I was having my epidural with Esme, and they kept the drugs. I don't know if you guys remember, they kept the drugs in the drawer, and I would just, every time the midwife came in, I would watch her going towards the drawer, and I had my eye on the fucking drawer the whole time, because I was like, there is, and you know, it's a totally, that's where the stuff is.
Yeah.
Anyway, thankfully, that's not how I feel about alcohol anymore, and it's been amazing, but it just, so I stopped drinking, and you know, overnight, it was the thing. It was the thing. And it doesn't mean that I don't suffer from kind of, you know, terrible self-loathing or anxiety still. But at least it's not sort of fueled by massive, you know, imbalance. And I'm not about to blow up my life every 2 seconds, which is what used to happen.
That's great news.
Exactly.
So let's get back to friendship, because I think one of the great things about what you do is you speak as a united voice. Like when you read your book, I'm Absolutely Fine, that's the title of the book, you speak as one voice most of the time.
It's very liberating that.
Yeah.
Because it means that the various things can't really be attributed to you, like who slept with the IT guy or whatever it might be. And also particularly with the painful stuff, because it with the stuff that's like who got drunk, who took drugs, who did crazy stuff. But when we're diving deep into anxiety or into shame, which is also in there, it's quite nice to know that no one knows who has written that bit.
I know, because the book is amazing. You must buy it. It's now available in floppy covered. Softback. Yeah. What's it called?
Paperback.
Softback. It describes me.
It's silverback.
Floppy back. Soft cover.
I like floppy back. Why don't you bring floppy back?
Yeah.
Bring floppy back.
But yeah, I like that, because I was trying to, because you, when you know the person who's written the book, you kind of have their voice in their head. But I was trying, like it sort of changed between your voice and Annabelle's voice.
But also sometimes it's meant to be just, you know, all of our voices. It's that internal monologue that we all have, the conversations we have with ourselves in the bath, sitting on the bed, staring at the wall, the 56 things we do before 8 a.m., what we're telling ourselves, what we're trying to convince ourselves of, what we're trying to talk ourselves into and out of. It's meant to be, you know, a little bit general, because I really do think that we all have a lot in common. I mean, one of the theories we have is that we call it mid-adulthood, sits in the Venn diagram where potential meets anxiety. That's where we are, because we have, you know, we have so much to offer and so much wisdom and so much erudition and perspective, and also a huge surge of panic and worry happening at the same time. And it's kind of interesting that.
Yeah. And the thing, what's been nice about the sort of the collective personal, as Annabelle, I think, coined that phrase, is that, you know, the women who respond to us and write to us and email us and whatever, they say, how did you get inside my head? How do you know? And it's because it's coming from
our
heads.
Someone said, I think your book was written by my subconscious.
Yeah.
That's a lovely thing to say.
Oh, so that's why we bother, really.
It's that connection.
Yeah.
And so, because the middle, obviously, you're not redefining middle age. You're just being honest about what it's about.
Well, I think it is about something that it didn't used to be about.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be about a shirt waster, a blue rinse, and staying at home.
Yeah.
You know? And
quietly getting angry about the menopause, but not letting it on.
You know, because the menopause. About it.
Yeah. You couldn't talk about the menopause. I mean, it's a terrible name. There's so dreadful. Much horror attached to that.
Dreadful.
And, you know, we're 44 and in the run up to it and quite curious about it, actually.
Yeah.
She says, about to turn on the air conditioning again.
Quietly self-fanning along the way.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I love now that we're seeing more middle-aged bodies, because obviously in films you were either the, you know, ingenue or the skinny little thing, or the nasty ex-wife or whatever, or the grandma.
Or the unfuckable best friend.
Exactly. Or the deranged cougar who, you know, looked super hot and but was sort of, you know, somehow old and therefore a joke.
Yeah, but now you've got, you know, like people like Emma Thompson, Helen Mirren, who we could probably say she'll forever be in the middle. I can't ever see her being old. But the women are portrayed as sexy, but also we're getting a diversity of bodies that we haven't seen before. And you've both been in media, you know, most of your working lives. Are you seeing a change in the way, obviously you're doing it through your column and your Instagram, but do you think more broadly we're seeing a change about?
Yeah, I think it's a long way to go. I think most body positivity and diversity advocates are incredibly beautiful. So that's fine to stand in your pants and say, I stand for all women.
Yeah.
I do remember, though, I think something interesting has happened with the age agnosticism. I remember when I first worked on a magazine, and this is about 20 years ago, and we were in a meeting talking about who to put on the cover, and this woman's name came up, and she was 26. And the male editor said, I think she's past it, don't you?
Fuck me.
Yeah. And I think...
And I think it was because she'd had a child, and she'd had a child young. So the combination of being 26 and a mother meant that she was soiled in some way and therefore over. And it was... And I was shocked at the time, and now I'm astounded. I'm not sure that would happen now.
And I think it's interesting as well, you know, watching covers being put together and body parts being moved or shrunk or whatever, you know,
reshaped,
and the level of kind of scrutiny and criticism and whatever and smoothing and, you know,
it's the only difference now is that women are doing it to themselves.
Yes.
With filters and Facetune apps kinds of things.
I didn't know about the media,
whatever the media is now.
Yes,
the mountain is saying, oh no, we won't airbrush, and here's some diversity of age and shape and colour and
I think it does filter through. Like, I mean, I definitely, I feel positive about, for my kids, for my girls, I have two girls who are 7 and 9, and I do feel more positive about the kind of images that they're going to see. You know, when I was 15, there was the Patrick de Marchelier cover of Vogue with kind of Cindy.
The famous one.
Krista Turlington, Naomi Campbell.
Black and white.
Black and white. Supers with their bodies and whatever. And that was the epitome. And then, you know, the epitome of kind of female beauty. And then we had the Kate Moss years.
Yes.
Where waif was in. And if you're, you know, God, I mean, it was...
The thigh gap, the massive thigh gaps, nobody could achieve.
Nobody can achieve. And I think that the idea that that was the pinnacle of kind of female beauty. And whatever it took,
even if it made you extremely ill.
Yeah.
That was what you used to be.
Terrible bad breath because of all the dieting.
All that ketone.
I think it's really brilliant that you can, that my girls will be able to see on Instagram or whatever, or on YouTube or wherever it is.
I remember when I was, you know, when we were like 14 or 15, what you really, really didn't want, was a big ass, right?
Yeah.
That was like, oh, yeah, she's very pretty, but she's got a big bum.
You know?
And now, with Kim Kardashian, whoever, you know, all anybody wants is a big ass. So that's what worries me also about young women leaping into plastic surgery and having their tits done and their noses done, their chins done and their arses done, because fashions change.
Yeah.
So, and this is permanent stuff. And also if you get it done when you're 18, I'm thinking really about Love Island.
Yeah.
Then you've given yourself no chance to grow into your body or to accept your body.
Absolutely.
And I think it's a bit like redecorating one room in a house. So if you get your nose done, then maybe the rest of your face starts to look a bit strange.
Yeah.
Same with tits, same with tummy, same with bum. So I just think that concerns me a little bit.
Yeah, and I like my body much more now than I did in my teens and my 20s.
Mm.
Because I don't know what it is specifically, because it's not a massive size shift or whatever. I think it's just understanding where I've got power. Mm. And I think you feel so disempowered in your teens and your 20s. Certainly just because you're on your path, whereas now, you know, I feel much more, oh God, dare I say it, empowered. I'm not going to say it, actually. Annabelle's looking at me like, please don't use that fucking word. She's making faces now.
But it is, I just, all I ever saw in my 20s was what was wrong with my body.
Yes,
and it was
exactly.
A lovely body back then. But now I just look for the good. Like, it's a complete shift. I'm like, oh, my boobs aren't quite as low as I thought they would be. Or if I go to the gym and lift a bit of weights and I feel strong, that's like a new high.
The strength is a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Particularly since I've recently got some kind of fucking sciatica in this side of me and some sort of carpal tunnel on this side of me. And all I want to do is think, oh, I'll be able to tie up my shoelaces in 30 years. But do you find, I find that I don't have the same body. And my body changes every day.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to greet me in the mirror. I don't know when I look down at myself. I don't know what I'm going to see every day. Part of it is subtle. I'm sorry. Part of it, I think, is psychosomatic. But part of it, I think, is actual. But whether it's hormonal or it's water retention or it's because I've exercised, because I haven't. Every day is different.
I know. This morning I was sort of looking at my boobs. I'm like, are the nipples going in? They look smaller than they were yesterday. And sometimes I have the pouch on my tummy. Like, tummy kind of hangs funny, and then other days it doesn't. It's a strange, you're sort of greeted with a, you know, like those flip books where you used to.
Yes, where you can make the different shapes.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So these are my knees today.
Yes, and I have a fireman's hat.
But you know, I guess we are a cluster of cells. We're not mobile phones. So maybe it should be expected that we look different, but it's weird to experience that different morning. And for me, particularly with the frontage, as we've discussed and all that, it makes getting dressed really stressful and sweaty.
Yeah.
Because I think I think, oh, that's what I'll wear tomorrow for this meeting or whatever I've got. And then I think that'll be great. And I put it on and it just is in no way great.
Yeah,
and
everything
also,
is wrong.
I think our sense of selves shift all the time as well. So when I look at my wardrobe and I think today I want to be, you know, this sort of power pussy, or I want to be a kind of, you know, I want to psych softer, or I'm going to be this or whatever. And then your body doesn't respond accordingly and your clothes don't respond. And then you just stand wrapped in a towel and you cry.
Yeah. And then sometimes I end up wearing a rather dispiriting mix of just stuff that will get me out the door.
Yeah.
Rather than stuff that I, you know. Love. I know. I love this dress.
I had a real, not a tantrum, but today I was like, I'm going off to see you guys and my friends, and I could literally wear anything, but I was like, no, but I want to feel good. Yeah. I want to feel good before I leave the house. I can't just, and it's a weird mix because you have that discussion, but it's like, it shouldn't matter and I'm fine as I am, but I want to feel the best I can be before I leave the front door.
But it's interesting. It's not about looking good, isn't it? It's about feeling good.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's how you want to project to kind of, it isn't like a sort of a flat magazine thing. You want to be a walking, talking.
Well, so isn't it funny when you have those days,
happy female,
where you feel like you look kind of great,
yeah,
and so you have a great day.
Yeah.
And I don't look in the mirror very much. It's not, if I do look in the mirror, I look in a compact one feature at a time. I'm not, I don't like mirrors much. But so I have a day when I feel great because I think I look great. And I get home and I look terrible. But I still had a great day. My mascara is down my face. I've got back fat. The whole thing's a terrible disaster. Hairy legs I hadn't noticed. Chin hairs. I mean, awful. But it doesn't matter at that point because I'm then...
Because you'd flicked a switch. Mm. You've had like, no, it's going to be happy, powerful, fabulous Annabelle. Fancy Annabelle. And then you're okay. And it's so weird that we make these rules. And I'm sure the rules change every single day. I have to do this, this, and this, and then I'll be okay. And then I'll be fine. Or then I'll be fabulous.
I think you're right. I think that's another layer of fuckery.
Yeah.
Your body changes and the rules change. So you're basically on one of those incredibly unfun fun houses with slidey floors at a fun fair.
It's like a really complicated maths problem that like even Stephen Hawking, like RIP, would not be able to solve.
No.
We're complex but wonderful, us women. Now this is a podcast, obviously, all about bodies, and we have got it. But can you both describe or tell me how you both feel about your bodies today?
It's really interesting, actually, because I've been thinking about it a lot in anticipation of the question. And last night I went out for dinner with my mum and my sister, and I ate my plate of noodles at a Thai restaurant, and then I ate my mum's plate of noodles. And I looked at myself in the mirror last night, and I thought, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. And that whole kind of spiral of kind of control, and you know, you're going to pay for it, and this, and I just thought, fuck off. Yeah. This is not helpful now.
How would you pay for it?
Well, by I don't know, by something feeling tight or uncomfortable, or by sort of a negative self-image, like waking up in the morning and then Helen's going to ask me how I feel about my body, and all I will think is, well, I ate two plates of noodles last night, and that's, and it's that punishing. So I'm in a little bit of a kind of punishing sense of my body, and I think it's partly because summer is coming or trying to come, failing to come. it's edging, and I feel like oh, I should be ready for summer, and I don't feel that, but I also know that that's insane.
Yeah.
And
so you've got enough sort of consciousness to sort of say, no, Emily, sit down.
This is not helpful. This is not useful.
Yeah.
Stop it. But there is still that nagging voice of, well, if you had to get into a bikini now, it would not look good.
Because you've had everything else saying, you're wrong.
Yeah.
You are wrong. Yeah. All the lies that feed that tell you your body is wrong and whatever you do is wrong. And then you know that because you've been educated and you've been empowered, that those feelings are incorrect.
So I heard a really good thing the other day, which was someone said, I just wish that voice in my head, that the evil voice that tells me lies and tells me these things, had maybe a French accent. Or just, because the trouble with that voice is it sounds exactly like me.
Yes.
If only I knew that it was devilish and feeding me information that is going to serve me very badly. Mm. You know, if it sounded like a man, for example. But it doesn't. It's just like me saying, you're going to look like hell in your bikini.
Yeah. Why are you doing this? Yeah.
Then I had Annabelle's voice in my head too, which is why I'm wearing this really fab jumpsuit, because I've been saving it for best. And Annabelle has just written a piece about why we save things for best, which is again another way of kind of controlling ourselves.
Less worthful.
Yes. Yes.
So I put on my my save for best jumpsuit, and now I feel great.
Yeah.
So there you go. So this morning, not good, and you know, negative voice because of the noodle voice. And then, you know, now...
Go away, noodle voice.
Yeah, go away, noodle voice. I wish it's...
But you're quite good at micropanic.
Yes.
She's quite good at not letting it take hold and run her.
Yes.
So you can recover quite well these days, can't you?
You're a good self-coach.
I've bounced back.
Yeah.
There you go.
Annabelle, now, how are you feeling today?
I'm in a bit of pain.
Oh no!
Because of this thing in my lower back and this thing in my arm. So, and what it meant last week, I was in a really bad state about my body because I hadn't been able to exercise for about 6 weeks because of this, which made me feel mad and super fat.
Yeah.
And I've got a history with that in that about 9 years ago, I lost 6.5 stone through heartbreak.
Wow. So did you just stop eating?
No, I got addicted to exercise.
Wow. Okay.
I cried on the cross trainer. I cried lifting weights. And then I had a child. So when I don't exercise, it makes me panic.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons I'm in pain today is I've gone back to the gym, even though I'm injured.
Okay.
And so the result is I'm in more pain, but I feel much better.
So you've had the high, you've had the endorphins.
But also I can see, I've been to the gym 4 times in the last 6 days or something, just doing a sweat.
Yeah.
Nothing complicated.
Yeah.
And I can feel that my body is different. I can wear clothes slightly differently.
Yeah.
It's and incredible. I don't know if it's psychosomatic or actual, probably both.
Yeah.
But so at the moment I'm feeling uncomfortable and yet more comfortable.
Yeah.
This is it. But you have to, I think so. Like I just got back into, I had like 3 or 4 weeks off running because Ellie and I ran with many other women.
Bravo, by the way.
In our pants, very slowly. Ellie was the fastest. By far.
She was
the fastest. Yes, she likes winning. But I love her for that.
did she run ahead? Yes.
Yeah, we started off together for the first minute. And then I said, no, you go on.
She said, well, if you don't mind.
She's off like in a cloud of smoke. She ran. It was my Pilates teacher who said to me, and I was like, oh, I can't run again. I'm going to be slow. She said, just walk it. Mm. Just walk the 5K and then do a bit more running. And when someone just gives you really obvious advice, you go, of course, I can just go for a walk. Because I set this expectation. I was like, well, I've got to run 10K again because I've just run 10K. And I've told the whole fucking universe that I can run 10K. And now I'm letting myself down. I'm letting all my followers down. No, but I could just go for a walk. And I was like, oh, my God, I feel amazing. And then the next day, I ran a little bit. And, all that sort of thing. And I think we feel like we always have to hit these – well, I put massive expectations about what I have to do. And when people say, oh, you've inspired me to do something, and I was like, oh, do I owe it to them? But then you have to kind of just ignore that as well and just get on with what I feel like I have to do. But exercise has just been an awakening because I think at high school and stuff, when you're doing PE, it just felt like a horrible thing.
Like a torture.
It
was punishment, wasn't it? Particularly if you weren't naturally sporty. And then so at the age of, 34 or something, I suddenly, having never run for a bus, got really athletic, really strong.
Yeah.
And no one would have known that was possible, but it just sort of happened.
Yeah.
And it happened without me knowing it was happening. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I didn't force myself to do it. I just did it. And it's true what they say about the fact that after 3 months you get addicted.
Yeah.
Literally on the 90th morning I woke up and thought, this is just what I do now.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's it. You just have to keep going back.
The trouble is, it's hard to find, even though you feel like a bit of an arsehole for saying it, exercise is redemptive in some way. Mm. It's hard to find a downside. Unless you're running on a twisted ankle and, going mad. It's hard to find a downside to just moving a bit.
No, and that's all it is. And someone said, even if you do 4 times a week, 10 minutes of huffy puffy walking, that will be completely.
I do find that since I've got no time now, the exercise I'm doing is better than nothing exercise.
Yes.
Rather than what was a sort of regime years ago. I'll do. There's cardio and there's Pilates and there's, not now. It's just move a bit when there's a half an hour window.
Yeah. And Emily, are you the same?
I started running at the beginning of the year and I quite like running in the dark, listening to Cardi B with my dog and a hood on, and as fast as I could around the park.
I love it.
If anyone bumps into me, I'm going to fuck them up. And then I hurt my knee.
I told her that would happen.
Yeah. Because everything I did it every night because I was like, this is so great. This feels so good.
Yes, you're going to hurt yourself.
I know. And I hurt my knee. And now I'm just running once a week and I never thought I could run ever.
Emily walks a lot though.
But I walk
a lot. She's very active.
Yeah.
She walks the dog. She walks everywhere she goes. So she's walking miles and miles every day.
Yeah, listening to podcasts.
Yes.
And I walk and walk and walk. So I feel that that's good. And then,
Can I just say, the other day I thought, I'll walk for once. Don't like walking.
Yeah.
And so I walked in between every meeting, I walked for maybe two and a half hours. And it said 8,000 steps at the end of the day. And you're meant to do 10. How, I ask you? Who's got time to walk for, 2.5, 3 hours a day to get
that
to 10,000
steps? That doesn't make sense, I'm sure.
That must have been more. Maybe there's something wrong with
your... Is my phone telling me lies?
Yeah,
great,
I think,
that's great.
That sounds like a 15,000 step day, not an 18,000.
I violently agree, Helen.
I read such a funny short story with David Sedaris talking about his Fitbit and how he became addicted. See, I don't think I should get one.
Yeah.
And he started literally walking from, he lives in West Sussex. He started walking between villages to compulsively get over 30,000. He was hitting 30,000 steps a day.
That's a lot.
Basically, spending 7 hours a day walking. Yes. And then he was like, I think this might be out of control.
Yeah.
I had one and I was just always doing that. And then I'd just like do some marching in the kitchen just to top up or just to get to a nice even 16,000. So it does play on you.
Yes, it's like you want the even number. It's like never trust anyone who leaves the telly volume on an odd number.
Yeah.
What do you mean 29? What's wrong with you, you psychopath?
Oh my God, don't come round to our house. Many reasons why.
Oh my God, this is the end of the middle.
No, like Emily does things like she leaves the fridge open.
Yes.
And I feel, my neuroticism, I just think the cold is pouring out. Everything's going rotten. Shut the fridge door.
The sexiest thing my husband has ever done for me was smash the alarm that tells the beep alarm.
Amazing.
That tells you when the fridge has been open for too long.
That's an incredible service. You should put that online.
Do you know what I mean? He took it down. I was like, you are so hot right now.
Smash more things.
Yes, exactly.
And I've just lost my hard on.
Yeah. Smash more things that are beeping at me, please.
Well, I mean, we could talk for hours and hours and days, but we have to get into the quick fire round. But before we do that, I just want to do a quick plug. You also do a brilliant podcast called
I'm Absolutely Fine.
And your book is now available in both hardcover
and floppy back. Is my favourite.
Oh my God,
thing.
I'm going to put that on a t-shirt. God. Excellent. And where can people follow you?
They can follow us at The Midult on Instagram and on Twitter at The Midult.
And they can read you. And do subscribe to your brilliant...
Oh, yes. If you go to themidult.com, then you can sign up to our newsletter, which comes out every week.
Love. And I do want a sabbatical. Thank you very much. That was your last one. So, excellent. All right. So, we're going to go into the quick fire round.
Okay.
Are we ready, ladies?
Oh, I haven't even looked at these.
Okay. I'll start with Emily then.
Please do.
Emily, what makes you feel sexy?
Well, like I said, my husband smashing the beeping thing on the fridge. Do you know what I've been thinking
That's
about?
Quite
this?
A niche porn.
Okay, it's a niche porn. I think when someone gives you their full concentration, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, no, I'm staring at you.
Yeah, I know. I'm staring at producer Emily.
Not in a kind of weird stalkery way.
Oh my God, you could
way.
Cut the tension with a knife.
I was like, what does she mean? And then I look up there. Yes, your full concentration. Yes, Emily.
It's quite a sexy thing when someone really listens to you or is really like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I find sexy.
Annabelle, what makes you feel sexy?
Oh, I never really know till it happens. I tell you something though, my body neurosis doesn't follow me into bed.
Excellent.
Once I'm there.
Woohoo.
I tell you, I think I have a sneaking suspicion. Even though I find getting dressed really hard, I probably look a bit better with nothing on.
Yeah,
not great. And also the light has to be right, there has to be Vaseline on the lens and all that.
You're a fucking sensation.
Emily, calm down. But it's quite a happy realisation for me that, you know, I don't sort of think, oh, you know, do my thighs look big? I don't really care at that point.
Once you're in, lovely
Once you're on the escalator, right?
Yes, exactly, in. Moving swiftly into the next question, what's your most favourite thing to put in your body?
You know what? That changes every day.
Mm.
Donuts.
Yes. Lovely.
Annabelle. I would say broadly.
I mean, probably alcohol.
Yes. Lovely. Champagne. What's your favourite alcohol?
I do like champagne. I like tequila.
Mm.
And I like vodka.
Yes. Very good. Lovely.
Shots, ladies.
Yes. I like an old-fashioned. I like a gingery rummy sort of thing. That's my favourite. Anyway, what's your most embarrassing body moment, ladies? It may have happened together. I don't know.
Oh, interesting. Most embarrassing body moment. I mean, 2 weeks ago, I went and had a picnic with some really good friends of mine, and it took me about 10 minutes to get off the picnic.
Because
we've been sitting down for so long on the I'm going to make excuses now.
Yes.
On the cold, hard ground.
Yes.
And honestly, I had to kind of like
Did you roll
myself off, and it felt really humiliating. Actually,
oh, no.
Yeah,
felt old lady,
felt really old lady.
Oh no,
that is me.
Yes.
Do you know? I think I've buried it.
Yeah.
There have been so many that I almost find it quite hard to think about.
You might be traumatized.
Yes, I have to say I've been having periods for 30 years or something. And even when I don't have my period, I still look at a white chair or a white sofa as a threat.
With fear.
Yeah. With great, great fear.
Absolutely.
I mean, I also have a bladder the size of a lentil. And and we were once interviewed for our first sort of major profile. And I had a little bit of wee in my jumpsuit.
Very nice. That's a little damp spot.
So sophisticated. It's like when you want to feel, you know, like you really have your shit together. But
the trampoline is not a friend.
I can't do it. I can't even look at it. Third sneeze. I can do the first two because you're kind of in control. But that third sneeze, I was like,
you have to hold on.
Yes.
And crush the pelvic floor. And
exactly. Like sort of curl up into a ball.
Absolutely.
Dreadful business. The next segment is called Fat Facts. So I'm going to blow your mind with a fact I've got from the internet about bodies. Did you know that you lose 4 kilos of skin cells every year? Can you imagine that as a visualization?
A sack. That makes me think of Fatbergs.
Yes.
Do you know, underneath the
Skinbergs.
Skinbergs.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
And most of the dust that you see underneath your bed is skin.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. Not under Annabelle's bed, but definitely under my bed. Oh my goodness.
Oh, I know. Have you got a messy and a neat partner? Are you more neat, Annabelle? Yeah.
Yep.
It's so funny because, like, talking
I'm not,
to you...
It's not that I'm more neat. I mean, Emily looks much neater than me, but it's my house.
Okay. You have to have a neat...
Yeah.
Emily, you're a bit more...
I'm not that fast.
Okay. Sometimes I open my linen cupboard just to know that everything is all right in there, and then I shut it again. And sometimes Emily opens my linen cupboard just to know that everything's all right. She doesn't have a linen cupboard. She has a pile.
Yes. Yeah. I do too. At the end of my bed, there's some towels, maybe.
Possibly.
She says they're clean. She says the pile is clean stuff.
The pile is kind of clean. It's fine. Yeah. Also, you know, our dog sleeps on our bed too. So there's a whole layer of... And when it's winter, it's basically like sleeping on a mud, gritty bath.
I don't like to discuss this. I bought her a fitted sheet for Christmas because she only had one.
No, incorrect.
Just one sheet in her life.
But I only do the sheet... Anyway... But it has been fairly transformative, actually, the second sheet. Oh. Highly recommend it, guys. Oh.
I bought her a fitted sheet and she bought me a posh bottle opener.
Oh, this
the
is
year
love.
Before was also good. I think you bought me some hangers with clips on, which I fucking love.
Yeah.
Revolutionary.
And I got you some hoop earrings.
Yeah, because I just had my ears pierced a few months ago.
Oh, yes, I remember you. Yes.
Which has been fantastic. That all I see in the world is hoops.
Yeah, yeah. Magnificent. All right.
I know, it's amazing, actually, to think that you didn't, that you took that long to have your, that hoops haven't been part of your daily existence.
I know. Well, I wore Claire's accessories clip-on hoops for about 10 years.
I can't do
where the gold rubs
anymore.
Off.
Yeah, yeah. No good.
Yeah.
No. Come.
But what I've realised is now that I'll wear a big diamond stud, which is probably 15 quid from Accessorize.
Yes.
But because I'm so old, everyone thinks it's real.
Fantastic. This is it. It's all about confidence, ladies.
Yeah, there's so
all
many,
about confidence.
Wear it like it's
pros.
Real.
Yeah. So many pros.
The Hall of Fat Fame. The next segment is called Hall of Fat Fame. So we like to, at the end of the podcast, put someone in the Hall of Fame. So who would you put in as an inspiration? Who do you...
To me?
Yes.
Emily.
Oh!
No, because also, I tell you what happened years and years ago is that I lost this enormous amount of weight. And what was sort of rather sort of compelling and disgusting was how interested people were in me. You know, oh my God, what's happened to you? And I, again, as I said, I was so unhappy, I hadn't really noticed.
Yeah.
And then I anonymously wrote about it and wrote about what happened and how I'd felt and how I'd sort of basically physically melted from shock and misery and woken up with this new body. And Emily said... But you were always beautiful. And she's been saying it ever since. And I almost believe her sometimes.
You should.
So she's in my Hall of Fat Fame.
Oh, Emily.
Well, I've got to put you in.
No, you don't. No, you really don't.
I
know my place in your life, and it may not be this.
I think I will put you in just because there is nobody else I'd rather do this with.
Beautiful. Women rock. Fatspiration. So these are the words or the mantra.
Fatspiration.
Fatspiration.
I love it.
Like fats entertainment. No, that's not right. Anyway, I don't know what I'm saying.
Fats all, folks.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Take fat. So a new band.
It's Fat It.
Yeah. Oh, they've got me there, people. They've got me there. Excellent. So what would be your meme? What would be your... Have you both got a saying that you hold dear that gets you through?
This is what I do to Annabelle and me when we're stuck, is I say, go, come on, Moat Meekin.
Come on, Rifkin. Do it, Rifkin.
Excellent.
And it's like you're the sort of cheerleader in your life, cheering on the women's football team. Go, Lionesses! You know, that's how I feel. So come on. Come on, Moat Meekin.
Excellent. I love it. My darlings, you've been magnificent as
we
always.
We love you, Helen.
Yeah, we do. We love you.
I love you. You're amazing. And do please listen to their wonderful podcast. I love all of the episodes, especially, who's the lady from Last Minute?
Oh, Martha Lane Fox.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Completely.
Also, your episode, which it was just full of us snorting with laughter.
In your episode, I remember a story where someone farted in the fridge.
Ellie farted in the fridge. I think that was like in the first 5 minutes.
To try and trap the fart.
Yeah, when we were backstage at a gig and Ellie farted in the fridge. I was like, she looked puzzled, and then all of a sudden just opened the fridge and farted in it. I was like, what have you done?
She looked puzzled.
What have you done?
It was the only way. Oh, listener, thank you for joining us on this wonderful ride through the mid-alt. I've been Helen Thorne, your host. The producer was Emma Corsham. And, of course, this podcast was sponsored by the fabulous F&F Clothing. We love F&F.
Hooray!
Follow them at F&F Clothing, and you can buy them online, next.co.uk, and get them in the big store, the Tesco Extra stores. Anyway, you love them, I love them. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye!
Bye!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.